Welcome. Before I start, I want to say a few things. It's been great that we have got a such diverse group of people and talented people in this church. I mean, to see over the last couple of weeks, or last few weeks and months or so, different people coming up and speaking from the front here. It's great to be in a church that recognises that. And so we've got Laura next week, we've had Jan, we've had James done it before. No, we have had you a long time ago. We have, but and Matt and Liz, and just looking upon that, we do have such a rich, diverse group of people that are given the opportunity to come up and speak. And so I like that about this church. And within this church, if you ever want to be part of anything, come up and talk to us, because we love that. We love that you guys want to be part of it, and we want you to feel like it is your church as well. And so in terms of that as well, we've had a few people go overseas and come back. So Tanya has just come back from Germany. When did you get back? 4 a.m. this morning. Excellent. did your family have to go to the airport? Hey, well done, Sam. Alex has come back from Korea, is that correct? And then Alan Manzi came back from Africa. When did you guys come back? Excellent. How's the jet lag for each one of you guys? That's good. And then the church council members went on a council retreat this weekend. And so I thought you few of us have been up there talking church council-y stuff. that was fun and games. But so we'd like to acknowledge that we are a church together, but we all go out and do so many different things. You know? And it's great to see us all back in here sometimes together to worship, which gives us the energy to go out. And whether we just do stuff within our own local towns or local places or workplaces, or we go out overseas and do other stuff, and it's really good that we can do that. So let's come together in a time of prayer first. Hey God, I just want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for the fact that you are a God that loves us and cares for us no matter where we are, no matter what we do, no matter how we serve. Lord, I want you to open up our hearts and minds and continue to talk to us tonight through the worship, through the fellowship, through the messages. And just let us see you in a new light tonight. We just pray these things in your mighty and wonderful name. Amen. So as Jacob said at the start, we're in the middle of our Game of Thrones series where we're looking at some of the kings of the Old Testament, in particular the Samuel and King sessions and that sort of stuff. And I love the Old Testament. I really, really do, because it has so many real stories about people of God that are flawed, that have just as mistakes as we do. And we can learn lessons from there, how God uses them and how God works through the situation as well. And so I love it how sometimes we can go back into the Old Testament and see how it works in with the New Testament, and always focus on how God works through people. And we have another one of these situations tonight. And last week, Annie touched on King David and through David and Goliath. And I'm going before that. I'm going the predecessor of that. I'm going through Saul. And then next week, Laura is jumping back forward. Oh, she's going to be doing something else. A surprise for us. Excellent. That's what I like to see. But it is a king. Yeah. She probably hasn't written yet, and she's going to talk to me afterwards and say, hey, Chris, you shouldn't have said anything. But anyway, we are looking at that. So tonight we're going to be looking at Saul and through different things he's done and surrounding him. And Andy touched a bit on it last week, but we're going to be talking about jealous and envy, because it's one of those situations that creeps into our lives all the time, and it is something that we just can't escape sometimes, whether it's we deal with it or we deal with other people around us with that. It can come into our lives. And I want to get your opinion on a few things in a second. I've got a video show, but I want to share a few, like I usually do, light-hearted stories to set the scene of this. There was a story in America, only in America, where a guy had a great motorhome. And he loved it. It was massive. It was huge. And he used to take his neighbours out on trips. And he loved the attention he got from getting a great big motorhome. Until his neighbour got one, which was bigger and better than his. And he was worried that his status would now diminish in the community. That he was jealous, not that he had a motorhome, that his status would go down. And so one night before his neighbour had his big trip planned, he thought, I know, I'm going to siphon some petrol out of his motorhome. And so in the middle of the night, he went out there, he got his tube and tried to siphon some petrol out. Unfortunately, the neighbour saw what was happening and called the police. And the police came and he was rolling around ill on the ground. They didn't know what was happening until they found out he didn't actually put the siphon tube in the petrol tank. He put it in the sewage tank. And so there was raw sewage around from where this guy was around ill. And so the policeman said, do you want to press charges against that man? And he said, no, this is the most fun I've had in a long time. Watching him do that was there. And so that's a bit of a jealousy there. And then the next story is from envy. And there was a woman who just kept on seeing all those women on television with all nice skin and looked at it and tried different things and couldn't get her skin to be nice. And so she read somewhere that Cleopatra used to bathe in camel's milk. And this is from Germany. So she thought, okay, where can I get a camel from? So, again, in the middle of the night, broke into the local zoo, whatever the zoo was, and stole a camel and took it home. And so the police was wondering where this camel was, and it left trails, or I don't know how it did. But when the woman got home, she realised the camel was a male camel. And so she couldn't get any milk from there. And so here's another aspect of, that's more jealousy, because she wanted what someone else had. But on a more serious note, there was a situation where I was talking to one of the students at one of the schools I was with, and he was saying he got robbed at a train station. And so a teen came up to him and said, I like those shoes. Where did you get those shoes from? And so he said, yeah, I got them from here. And then he thought that would be the end of it. And so he went off, went to what he had to do, came back, and the youths were still hanging around the train station. And he said, no, I really like those shoes. I'm not going to be able to get to where your thing is. Can I give you some money for it? And he thought he was only joking. He thought, no. Look, I can't give you my shoes. What am I going to wear home? And then he said, oh, no, here's actually some money. I can give you that. I want those shoes. And he still said no. And then he pulled a knife and actually robbed the teenage boy of his shoes there and then because he wanted his shoes. And so another jealous act that spawned something in the moment. And we've all had situations of jealousy in our own life. I want to show a video, again, from the Big Bang Theory.
All I'm saying is, if it took all the money they spent trying to make a decent Hulk movie, they could probably just make an actual Hulk.
That is apt and amusing. I think I shall share that with Amy Farrah Fowler. She'll appreciate the witticism.
Thank you.
It'll also help improve her initial impression of you.
So what's going on with you two?
The status is, as it always was, she's a girl, she's a friend, she's not my, please forgive me for doing this, girlfriend.
Right. So you're still just texting and emailing? You don't feel any need to hang out with her? You know, be in the same room?
Leonard, you are my best friend. I've known you for 7 years, and I can barely tolerate sitting on the couch with you. Imagine my attitude regarding prolonged physical proximity to Amy Farrah Fowler.
Got it.
Well, I sense judgment on your part.
No. Maybe a little.
May I suggest that your criticism is based on jealousy?
Jealousy? What do I have to be jealous of?
I have a functioning and satisfying relationship with a female. You have none.
All right, that.
Jealousy is an ugly green-eyed monster, not unlike the Hulk, who, by the way, also has a girlfriend. In this iteration, Jennifer Connelly, whom you may recall is the girlfriend of Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind. A feel-good romp if there ever was one.
I'm not jealous.
Leonard, not jealous.
There we go. Now, I want some feedback from you guys. What is the difference between jealous and envy, do you think? They're very much intertwined with each other. They really are. along the, both along the same sort of lines. You're almost there, it's about there. And I think it's elements of that. Go, Phoebe, go. You got to say something? Chris has got his hand up because he's looking at he's on the phone. So, an example of that is, I've looked the same thing. It could be, we could be on the same party, Chris. It must be the name. It says, if you want your neighbour's new convertible, you feel envy. If she takes your husband, you feel jealousy. So, it's almost, and it's, well, I don't know, that was a weird example from there. I get that now. But it says, envy is what, is when you want someone, if you want what someone else has. But jealousy is when you're worried that someone else is going to take what you have. So it's along those lines. Basically, so jealousy, as I said, is what you is that where you worry you're going to take something else. Like in the first story, he was worried that he was going to, the status was going to be taken away from him. So in terms of getting a new motorhome, he had this status in his society that he was this great person, and then someone else came along. He's worried that that status wasn't going to be taken away from him. Whereas the woman, the girl, was worried, he was envious of what that other woman had with smooth skin and wanted that sort of thing. So I want you to turn to the person next to you or people next to you in a small group and talk about some of the situations that you see in today's society about what's jealousy and what's envy, envy or envious. And just see, because we saw a couple of examples there, and you guys have a lot more examples where you see people jealous of different things or envious of things. So what is one of the two areas? Just turn to your person next to you for 30 seconds and say, how does jealousy look like in your day-to-day life and how does envy look in your day-to-day life? All right, Ted, just wrap it up there. Just because the level of conversation, we can see that there's lots of jealousy in our lives or envy in our lives. And we don't have to look too far before we see the fruits of it, so to speak, and the fruits in a bad way rather than in a good way. And we could share amongst the whole group, but I think that, as I said, that there's lots of different ways that it does show itself in our lives. And some are more personal to us. Some have been jealous of us, and we've seen that. Or we have been jealous in certain situations. And jealousy can happen in the church as well. You think, oh, I wish I could sing like that person. Or I wish I could be like that. Or I wish our church could be as big as their church. We've been working hard for 20 years here and we've only got this here, but they've been up for 2 months and they've already got more numbers than us. So we can be envious of that. So it doesn't necessarily have to be people who don't believe in God. It happens to us as well. And I want to hear two examples from Saul's life where we can track one's jealousy and one's envy and then look at the end to see how we can work with those feelings that we have. And so D-Mac's going to read the first one. And so from 1 Samuel 1:21.
I'm going to grab this stuff while Jacob gets on that.
And it's not on there. It's coming there.
There we go. I was going to read up here because you guys are reading the same thing and that way we're not going to get mixed up. And I apologize if I step up names, because I will. When Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons as Israel's leaders. The name of his firstborn son was Joel, and the name of his secondborn son was... There we go. Abijah. And they served at Beersheba. But his sons did not follow his way. They turned aside after dishonest gain and accepted bribes and perverted justice. So all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. They said to him, "You are old, and your sons do not follow your ways. Now appoint a king to lead. Appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have." But when they said, "Give a king to lead us," this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to him, "Listen to all the people are saying to you. It is not you they have rejected, but they have rejected their king. As they have done this from the day I brought them up out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are doing this to you. Now listen to them, but warn them solemnly and let them know what the king who will reign over them will claim as his rights." Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. He said, "This is what the king will reign over you. This is what the king who will reign over you will claim as his rights. He will take your sons and make them serve with his chariots and horses. They will run out in front of his chariots. Some he will assign to be commanders of thousands and then commanders of fifties, and others to plough his ground and reap his harvest. And still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will steal your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and your vineyards and your olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage..." Yeah, I got that right. "...and give it to his officials and attendants. Your male and female servants and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will give a tenth of your... He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become slaves. When that day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen, but the Lord will not answer you in that day." But the people refused to listen to Samuel. "No," they said, "we want a king over us. Then we will be like all the other nations, with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles." When Samuel heard all the people had said, he repeated it before the Lord. The Lord answered, "Listen to them and give them a king." Then Samuel said to the Israelites, "Everyone go back to your own town."
So Israel, so a bit of the background towards that. Like as you saw there, they had a rulership, a leadership program where the judges ruled over. So the elders would consult the judges and the judges would make the decision, here we go there. And so they'd been successful in there for a long time. But now Samuel's getting old and his sons, as it says there, have been a bit corrupt. And they've done some dodgy things and the people of Israel don't like this succession plan. So instead of going to Samuel and saying, "Hey, we've got a bit of a problem here, let's work it out together," they were envious of the other nations, of their kings, and said, no, what they've got is good, we want that to us. And Samuel said, no, what on earth are you doing? Don't you see what else is happening? And I made a list of what they would do. They'll force their sons to make chariots. They'll force their sons to be in the front of the chariots at war. You know, they'll force people to plough his land and crops for him. Now, he's forced their daughters to become perfumers and cooks and all other sorts of things. He will take the best of their crops and livestock. He will be their slaves. He will take their slaves. He will make them become their slaves. They'll cry out for relief for the king, but still, they want a king. They said, no, we don't see all that sort of stuff. We just see the good stuff. We a strong leader at the front there, and we want a king that will be king of us. And Samuel says again, he says, what's going on here? You know, these things are bad. Like these things are, they're going to take everything here, but they got so wrapped in their envy of the perceived greatness of the king, they want a king. And so sometimes we get like that as well. And so sometimes when things are going through hard times for ourselves, when we go through a bit of trouble, we just look at other people or other things and think, man, they've got it better. Man, I wish I could be like that. I wish I could do that. Or I wish I had them because they seem to get it easy. Whereas we don't see what they're going through their lives. We don't see anything like that. We don't see that they're not going to take our livestock or one of our slaves, but we don't see the troubles what they go through. We just look at the good things of theirs, and they have pitfalls as well, but we don't see that. We're just envious of them. And so we fall in the same trap. We hate what we got ourselves. We don't look at how we can improve it. We just be jealous of other people or envious of other people. So as a result, it's one type of envy there. And as a result of this jealousy, they install Saul as king. And to begin with, he does a pretty good job. Look, there's one story there where he goes to defeat the Ammonites because the Ammonites threaten to gouge out all the eyes of the Israelites. So he says, no, I'm not going to let that happen. Let's get all of these people here and let's attack the Ammonites. And that's what happens. But the vibes change and things start to change as well. And eventually, like in 1 Samuel 14:35, he says, and the Lord regretted that he made Saul king over Israel. Because he started to take the focus of God and put it back on himself. And then in 1 Samuel 15:1, it says, how long will you mourn for Saul, since I've rejected him as king over Israel? See, and then David comes along, which Andy talked about last time. And we know the story about David and Goliath and the battle there. And then from then on, Saul starts to use David as his battle, as his soldier. And he sends, you feed a Goliath, I'm going to use you. You're going to be sent forth and you're going to do great things for me. And he does, and he wins battles. Then it gets back to this point here, and then the next part of it is, it says, and this is from 1 Samuel 18:5 to 11. Whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that then Saul gave him a higher rank in the army. This pleased all the troops in Saul's officers as well. So when the men were returning from home from their David, killed the Philistine, the women came out from the towers of Israel to meet King Saul, and with singing and dancing, and with joyful songs, and with timbrels and lyres, and they danced and sang, Saul has slain thousands, yet David has slain tens of thousands. Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. They've credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands? What more can he get but the kingdom? And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. Next day, an evil spirit from God came forcibly on Saul. He was prophesying in his house, and David was playing the lyre, as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it at him, saying to himself, I'll pin David to the wall. But David eluded him twice. And so, that's that bit of text there. And so we get to a point where Saul could have used David in all his battles. Saul could have kept on going and saying, I'm going to be the greatest king because I've got a great soldier army in front of me. I've got David, who's this great soldier who everyone knows and fears David, but he's mine. Instead of doing that, he gets jealous. He gets jealous of the status that David has in the community. Because people are singing, Saul killed 1,000, David killed tens of thousands. So he could have taken that two ways. He could have taken that, David and Saul are the same ones and they're accrediting those victories to me. And I don't mind if they say David takes the credit because in the real world, Israel wins. But he didn't take it like that. He took it as, they're thinking David's better than I am now. I'm jealous of that status that David has. I'm jealous of him now. How am I going to change this? What's going to happen now? And from that moment on, as we heard last week as well, Saul tries to kill David. And so we get into this position now, two types, where firstly, the Israelites were envious of the other nations and wanted a king. And now Saul is jealous of David because he's getting this status that he's got and he wants now. Get back to what we started at the start. They're not too dissimilar to what we experience. They're not too dissimilar to what the feelings that we have or the people around us of jealousy and envious. They get mixed up very easily. And I'm going to put them twice together because they come from the same thing. And so when left untreated, it can fester in us. It can make us feel bad. It can make us feel bitter towards people or other things or start resenting ourselves because of it. And we've all been in those situations where it has happened like that before in our own lives. So how do we deal with these feelings? Because as we saw with Saul, that was the end of it. How do we deal with those four? Now, I'm going to flick forward to another Saul who got turned into Paul. So I was linked in a way there, but differently then. He talks about it in a lot of his letters. And so when we dig into Saul's life and Paul's life, well, Paul had a very different past. Paul was Saul. Saul was this leader in the New Testament that was killing Christians all over the place. And he had a dramatic conversion to Jesus, to Christ, and said, okay, I'm going to change my life. And started changing, started writing letters and converting people. And that. But not everyone liked him, so he didn't have a rosy life as soon as he became a Christian. He was in prison. He got spat upon. He got lots of things happen to him. And so we pick up one of these letters from when he was writing to another town when he was in jail. So Paul knew what it was like to have good times and bad times as well. And so in Philippians 4:10-13, it says, I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed you were concerned, but you have no need, opportunity to show it. I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I've learned. In the middle of my sermon then, my daughter tried to FaceTime me. So that's why I had to stop there and just go, what am I doing? And that's on sermon now. So I'm going to show this point to my daughter in the back. But as I said, I'm not saying it because I'm in need, for I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. So the keys are in there. See, it says in there, I've been hungry, I've been well-fed, I've had plenty, I've had one. I've had situations where he probably felt jealous of other things. But he says in there, I've learnt the secret of being content with who I am. Being content with who Jesus has made me, with being content in my own situation. It didn't come to him like that. He learnt it. He had to learn it. And for us, that learning can take a long time sometimes. God gives us so much. But sometimes we don't see what we're given. Sometimes we have jealous and envy in front of us and we don't know what the situation is. We have to learn the secret how to be content, how to be happy with what God has given us. We look around this room and I look upon how awesome you guys are. How each one of you guys are a gift from God to this place, to each other, to everywhere. But sometimes we don't see that. Sometimes we just see what other people have. See, Paul said he had to learn that secret. And sometimes we have to learn that secret as well. See, there's a myth out there that if you're being content, it means you're comfortable. And I shouldn't compare myself to others, so I shouldn't try to improve. But it is that we still need to improve ourselves, but not just to other people. Galatians 6:4 says, each one should test their own actions, then take pride in themselves alone, without comparing themselves to someone else. How easy it is to compare ourselves to other people and look at what we've got and what we haven't got because they've got it, or what we've got, or the society around us tells us we should have. Here it's saying, don't compare yourselves to other people. Look at yourself. Look what God calls you. Look what God says you should have. Look what God tells you to do. Be inspired by that, not by other people. So, how do we deal with the jealousy in our life? See, for Paul, he says, I rejoice greatly in the Lord, and he renewed my concern. We need to get back to looking how Jesus sees us and looking at what Jesus put us in our situation of life. See, it's easy to get in those jealous situations. And the last bit of that is that I can do all things through him who gives me strength. So sometimes we doubt what we and our own abilities. We say, I can't do that. There's so many stories in the Bible where it says, where God calls people to do stuff. He calls Moses. He says, I can't speak. But I'm still going to lead you to the nations. I'm still going to do that. God gives us the strength and the power to do these things. Sometimes we need to take a step back from our own situation and see it from God's eyes. And for most of us, we need to do that sometimes. Sometimes we're in a happy place ourselves. We think, no, I don't have any jealousy or envy in my life at the moment. I'm okay with that. I want to finish up by pointing out the first point in our vision statement, which says we want to be a community that uplifts, supports, and encourages one another in faith and in fellowship. And so for that point, if we are jealous or envious, we don't really uplift. We don't really encourage. Because when we are like that, we focus on ourselves. We get bitter towards the people around us. And so if we want to be a community that does that, we have to strip away jealous and envious thoughts. Don't be like Saul, but be like Paul. And learn the steps to being content. Now, I know for some people it's very hard. I struggle with this with different people all the time. And it's a long journey for some people in terms of getting jealousy out of their life. But it can be done. And if you do need help with any of that sort of situation, we've got leaders or friends within there to help you with that sort of thing, to help you take your eyes off your inadequacies and what God sees you as. So let us just close in prayer and give these thoughts up to God. Hey God, we thank you. We thank you that we are made by you. We are made in your image. That you love us no matter who we are, and no matter what we are, no matter what we have done. Lord, we see jealousy and envy rife in this world. And sometimes we get caught up in it. We get jealous and envious of other people around us. And even in the church, we get caught in those situations. But Lord, we ask you to help us see our own lives like Paul did, to be content in that situation, to help us to learn the secret to be content in our life. And that secret is to see ourselves how you see us. Lord, for some of us, it's a real big struggle. But Lord, help us. Guide us. Put us around the people that we need to be around for that to happen. We just pray these things in your mighty and wonderful name. Amen.